Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey there, it's the Planet Football Podcast. Grant Wall here in New York, across the desk from Luis Miguel Echegaray. How are you, my friend?
Hello, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm back from a week of vacation. Went to Boston, enjoyed it. I actually went to two conferences. My wife was at the TED-Med conference, which I attended, learned a lot. And then the MIT Sports Conference, where I had a panel with a bunch of soccer analytics people, which I really enjoyed. Including some people who've been on this podcast before, Ted Knutson from StatsBomb, also some other interesting folks. And yeah, it was really good. I learned, I like learning things still.
Absolutely. I'm married to a teacher, Grant. I can attest to that. I threw my phone away yesterday. I didn't look at it once. It was beautiful.
Nice. Nice. That's excellent. Lots going on in the world of soccer. Lots going on in the world right now, and some of it crossing over. And so we're going to talk about a few things in this podcast. I'll go down some of the topics. We're going to talk about the coronavirus and its impact on the soccer world, which is extensive. We're going to talk about England, Man United beating Man City again, and whether this Man United stretch right now is a legit, they're not bad situation. We're going to go to Europe, talk about Spain, the lead changing once again, Barcelona back on top. We're going to go to Italy, where Juventus had a big win over Inter in an empty stadium. We're going to talk about Germany, where Bayern just continues to win, even without Robert Lewandowski. We're going to do a little quick Champions League preview of midweek, and then lots to talk about in the Americas. We're going to talk a little MLS, who's off to good starts and surprisingly bad starts. We're going to talk about LA Galaxy losing at home to Vancouver and Chicharito not talking to the media after not scoring again. We're going to talk about Boca Juniors winning the title in Argentina ahead of River Plate on the last day, and also the U.S. Women's National Team. I was at the game yesterday where they beat Spain 1-0. Kristen Press continues to impress. Julie Ertz as well. And the latest between U.S. soccer and the U.S. women's team in their gender discrimination lawsuit. But let's start with coronavirus. And I'm sitting here right now with sanitizer in my hand.
I see it.
I carry this everywhere, actually, before coronavirus, because my wife's an infectious disease doctor.
Yeah, I was going to say, by the way, the little Purell that you have there, that's been there for a while.
That is true. You can never really have too much of it, but especially now. And the only thing is, I think this is like probably I could sell this little bottle for what, $15 somewhere on the open market?
$15, that's a bargain at this point.
So obviously, it's a serious deal. Coronavirus continues to be spreading globally and is impacting daily lives around the world, more and more so in the United States. But in Europe, especially with soccer, we're seeing it impact things. Italy, as of right now, is playing entirely in closed-door games, empty stadiums. They have not yet suspended the league. That could happen. Switzerland did suspend its league. We're looking at Champions League games, big ones, midweek here. They announced that PSG against Dortmund in Paris is going to be played in an empty stadium. There will be other empty stadium Champions League games. And I guess the only question I have for you is, should we be playing these games at all?
It's a good question. And to be honest, you know, to the words of Jurgen Klopp, I don't even know if I'm the right person to even comment on this. I believe people like your wife and other professionals have much more of a definitely statistical and scientific response. But from my own opinion, I think that specifically when you're looking at countries like Italy, Asia, countries in Asia like South Korea, of course, Japan is still thinking, China, naturally, and Iran, you know, there are drastic measures now being taken in order to, you know, at the very least, minimize the spread. I think that France, from what we've been reading in the last few weeks, is definitely a country that's leading up to at least having, you know, specific requirements when it comes to big gatherings. And when we talk about our sport, empty stadiums are not a new thing. Granted, it's mainly because they are punishments, either due to racism or any act of aggression or violence from a fan group. So this is a new territory when it comes to this. From this specific France perspective, the latest one being PSG and Dortmund, you know, I believe that the ministry has said, you know, anything that really attracts more than 1,000 people should really be restricted. Obviously, the Champions League is that. And I don't know. I think I fall to the theme of this. In order to be prepared, prepare yourself now and use the utmost regulations that you can within your jurisdiction in order to control something that you don't want to either increase or worsen. And when you have about what? Parc des Princes is an 85,000, 90,000 stadium, you know, bringing in people from all over the place. I do believe that this is probably the correct response to your question. Should now, from the moment on, from now on, should we have a situation where no gang should be having fans? Well, I think that even though it may be a disastrous thing to say, it's not necessarily the most ridiculous thing to point out, taking in mind that at the very least, you're probably minimizing the risk.
Yeah, I would say a couple of things here. One, I have no problem at all with empty stadium games. I think that makes perfect sense from a public health perspective. And for whether the game should be played at all, even in empty stadiums, I want the players to be safe. I want the players to be right, healthy, and the teams, the delegations they travel with. You know, the head of the Italian Players Union said he wanted the season in Serie A to be just stopped for now. And if that's how the players feel and they don't feel safe, then I'm perfectly fine with not playing the games at all. It's just sports.
Absolutely. You know? Well, I mean, health at the end of the day is the most... And listen, Italy, outside of Asia, Italy is the country that's been most affected. So this is a no-brainer to me when you have, you know, and now to say, should we really just not consider playing anymore? Well, to your point, it's really more about the safety and minimizing the risk. And, you know, at the very end of the day, people have to take into perspective that what's more important... And is having an empty stadium the cost of saving lives, saving the risk of, you know, maximizing and worsening this situation? And so be it.
The other thing that comes clear to me just from talking to my wife is you're much better off from a public health perspective taking action that is too strong than action that is not strong enough.
Right, exactly.
And so... when you think about it, that makes total sense, right? And if you're going to get, if you take action that in the end, 5-6 months from now, was like more than maybe you needed to, just be okay with the fact that you might get criticized for that. But you'd much rather do that than not take strong enough action, because then you've got a world of problems.
Absolutely. Better safe than sorry, the old cliche, right? Better actually. The one thing that I will say, though, is that whatever decision is being made, we need to make sure that these decisions are at least pushed to make sure that these decisions are, one, not being done in the sense of trying to create panic, but at the same time being done in a timely manner where you're able to, at the very least, create some kind of warning to others. Listen, this game is probably not going to happen, etc. So, you know, I'm looking at La Liga right now and seeing how that's going to stipulate. I mean, obviously, we know that the Valencia-Atalanta game is also going to be played behind closed doors. So, you know, and that was done with a, you know, they acted very quickly on that. And no matter the disappointment, I think it's very, very good that it's being done, you know, quickly and with direction in order to give the fan enough warning, because, you know, you can only imagine that so many people are trying to figure out. But again, to your point, player safety, staff safety, people that work in stadiums, et cetera, these are the people that we really should be thinking about, you know, when it comes to making sure that everybody's safe.
And keep in mind, too, here, this may cause changes or postponements of Euro 2020. This may cause changes or postponements to the Olympics later this year. And we don't know yet. I just find it crazy that the IOC chief press officer would actually say, we are full speed ahead on the Olympics and we're not changing that.
Yeah,
which
you
is
can't
like,
do that.
That's stupid.
I thought that was a really
irresponsible,
really silly comment. You can't say that because you don't know what's happening. CONMEBOL at this point this week are making a decision whether they're going to continue with the World Cup qualifiers beginning at the end of this month. The Asian ones are completely rescheduled anyway. So you can't say that. You can't say that. It's really, like you said, irresponsible. We understand the importance of something as magnificent as the Olympics. But again, this has nothing to do with sports. This is about safety and health.
There are sports to talk about, though, because a lot of soccer is still taking place, especially now that MLS has started. Let's start in England like we usually do. Man United 2, Man City 0. Ederson at fault on both goals. 25 points now separating Liverpool in second place Man City. Man City has a game in hand still. Just a huge gap here. And City, not looking great in this game, but Man United, give them credit, even though they didn't have a lot of possession, they were the better team.
Absolutely. This is some of the worst performances I've seen from a Man City player in a while. I mean, to your point, Ederson, I thought, you know, didn't have a good game. It's a good thing for him that Alisson is hurt for Brazil, because if he was trying to fight for the number one spot, it wasn't happening this time around. I mean, the second goal, of course, was horrific, a really bad decision. But to your point, Manchester United took care of business. And I said this last week, and I was a little sheepish about it, Grant, when I said it. I was kind of holding back about Bruno Fernandes and how, you know, because I'm not somebody in this sport of ours, I'm not somebody to, unless you're Lionel Messi, I'm not somebody to say that one individual can completely change the mindset of a team. It hardly ever happens. Lionel Messi is an anomaly, as we know, right? But in this specific situation, and granted, players like Luke Shaw played well, Wan-Bissaka, I thought Daniel James was terrific. But Bruno Fernandes' introduction to this team has created such a positive energy, not just from a, you know, atmosphere perspective, but just tactically. Because really what they needed, right, was somebody, especially since Paul Pogba's injury, was somebody that could not only move the chains, but that is so direct in his thinking. The Martial opener, that free kick was so well done, I mean, from the training ground. But that's Bruno Fernandes to a T. He doesn't specifically care so much about creating beautiful play as opposed to being super direct. All he wants is his team to go in there and pressure and score. And you know that this only thing was to set it up. I mean, him and Martial were looking at each other. The arm was up, and that was the indication for him to think it over. But it wasn't just the assist there. It's just, I really believe that his introduction has created such a bolt to this squad, and not to take anything away from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because now they're finally. And the last thing that I will say is, it's interesting because his introduction is also a counter to January transfers. Right. How we sometimes say January transfers are not necessarily going to help that much. Well, guess what? Bruno Fernandes has really revitalized this squad and helped the entire team really live it up. And it was a deserved win for Manchester United.
Well, I thought nobody would challenge Erling Haaland for being the most important January transfer in Europe, and Bruno Fernandes is pretty darn close at this point.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, I mean, just and he seems to have had an impact on players like Martial, not just in Martial's finishing ability and improved play, but just improved attitude is part of it as well. I mean, the general enthusiasm that you see with these Man United players right now, they seem like a changed team. Now they've gone 10 games without a loss. How changed is it? Is it that big a deal? United still in fifth place, 3 points behind Chelsea.
Yep, and the Chelsea win was an emphatic one this weekend as well to make sure that they at least created that separation. But, you know, there's nothing to say that Manchester United can't keep going. I mean, listen, like to your point, they haven't lost in a while. They just beat City twice in the Premier League, you know, which says a lot. And now, you know, they don't have the burden of the Champions League to worry about. Like Chelsea still has to worry about that with Bayern Munich. So
not much longer, though.
Not much longer, right? They might as well send the second squad. That's true. I mean, Frank Lampard could be like, you know what? I need to worry about, you know, keeping in a Champions League spot as opposed to trying to do anything here. But again, a few weeks ago, I was mistaken thinking that Tottenham was going to probably take this fifth spot. My God, have they kept going downhill? And Manchester United can definitely continue to keep moving up. I mean, they're at this point, they are playing in a way that they can battle anybody. Whether they'll beat everybody else, I don't know, but they can battle anybody, and they have finally found a formula that keeps them going. And hats off to Bruno Fernandes and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
The one question I have about United is, can they do this? Can they start playing better regularly against not great teams?
Right.
Because that's their issue. They seem to
especially
really perform
away from home
at their best against the top teams in the league, and that may have to do with how they play in these games when they're totally fine having 28% possession, I think, which is what it was.
Yeah.
It's just different when they play mid-table and lower-table teams.
You know what? I'll also say I made a little mistake. I mean, I'm talking about Chelsea and Bayern Munich, but they still have the FA Cup to play. They still have the Europa, you know, which is, you know, granted, it may not be a priority as much. I don't know, but there's still matches to be played. After that, they still have to play Sheffield United. They still have to play, you know, but the rest of that schedule is doable. But to your point, is about beating the teams that they should be beating, which has been a struggle for them for a while.
Let's move to Europe. Spain, Real Madrid losing 2-1 to Betis in what even Zinedine Zidane called their worst game of the year. And how crazy is it that they worked so hard in that second half against Barcelona to win that game, and that could have been a real springboard, and then right after that, Real Madrid does this. Now they're 2 points behind Barcelona, which won its game, 1-0 against Sociedad.
Grant, honestly, my man, I'm going to stop talking about La Liga. Like, I don't, we keep predicting, and it's just a mess. Like, to your point, Real Madrid did so well to beat Barcelona in an imperfect Clásico, but at least they got that win. I mean, they were terrible against Betis this past weekend. Terrible. And Barcelona won, but they weren't that good either. But at least they got the 3 points. So now, you know, we're in a situation where, again, it goes back to the theme that we've been talking about, which is whoever wins this league is more to do with taking advantage of the other team's mistakes as opposed to both being exemplary, you know, teams that are doing really well week in and week out, because that is not happening. Are Real Madrid's eyes where they're a lot more Manchester City this week? You know, were they thinking too much about that Champions League game? Who knows? But it was an awful, awful game. But hats off to Real Betis for winning. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess who is looking worse? Real Madrid. Who has a chance of winning the table once again? Barcelona, I guess.
I don't think that's this week, by the way, the Man City
that's
thing.
That's correct, so right. It's in 2 weeks.
It's just
time.
A really poor performance.
So there's no excuses. I try to give you an excuse, Real Madrid. I'm sorry. You were terrible.
I mean, like, I just would ask the question. I should do the research here. I'm sure someone has. Worst La Liga champion since? That's kind of how I feel about
right.
Whoever ends up winning this title race.
Yep, I completely agree. Like we said, they're accumulating the lowest points for a long time. I can't give you the stats right now, but it's been for a long time. And, you know, with Barcelona leading by 2 points, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But I can tell you this right now. It's not necessarily a match or a race that I'm specifically DVRing every weekend to watch.
Over in Italy, I'm wondering if we might be seeing a two-team race at this point, because it's been Juve, Lazio, and Inter. But now with Juve beating Inter 2-0 in the empty stadium, which was so bizarre to watch that game in, when you can hear the ball hitting people's feet and people talking on the field, and you're like, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah, so weird.
So Juventus now on 63 points, 9 points ahead of Inter, which does have a game in hand, but still, Lazio at 62, one behind Juve. And I just was stunned at how poor Inter was in this game.
Yeah, I think maybe the big part was the empty stadium. I don't know how much that can add an emphasis on a player's psyche.
I thought that would have been good for them to have to go to Juventus. You don't have to deal with the home crowd for Juventus.
Maybe, but I don't know. I just think like Antonio Conte relishes these moments when he goes away from home and he wants to just take an advantage. But to your point, I thought that we'd see more from Inter Milan fans or no fans, but yeah, now this is, you know, Inter's loss is Lazio's gain, and it's definitely a two-horse race, I think, between both sides. It just depends on now, you know, what's going to happen with the league anyway,
right?
And the opposition that they have. I mean, Lazio have a tough game away at Atalanta after this, and you know it. And Juventus away at Bologna, which is a doable one on Friday. So I don't know how much. It's a tough one, Serie A, right now, just because of the external issues that are going on around it. But I will agree with you. I think it's a two-horse race. But I think, once again, Juventus will just about skim it.
And by the way, we go back to the beginning of the season and congratulating before the start of the season to the winners of the big European leagues. And except for Liverpool instead of Man City, that's what we're looking at, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean... should we just give up now?
I actually have a bet on this. So when we did that, Ian Joy, great guy, made a bet with me. He was like, one of us, the loser, would have to pay for dinner. And he told me that at least two of the five leagues would have new champions this year.
Yeah.
And right now, as of now, he's going to owe me dinner. Because it's just Liverpool, right? Yeah. It, you know, it's
that's the given. That's done. Like Liverpool, we can tick the box whenever you want.
Bayern Munich, PSG, yep. Juventus. What's the other one?
Barcelona.
Oh, Barcelona.
Yeah.
So
they're still too close to call on a few, but yeah, it's looking good. By the way, the calendar date that we need to remember is April 26th when Juventus hosts Lazio.
Maybe,
if it happens. Might be a FIFA game by this point. But yeah, it's just Serie A is a tough one. But I think, I think Ian might be winning this one at this point.
No, he's not. He's not. He's behind, man.
I know, but it's so weird, man.
It's very hard to predict. I will say that. I also am a big Paulo Dybala fan and just a fantastic goal for Juventus in this game. And yes, you wish that he would do that more consistently, but his ceiling is so high. I kind of wish he would get more opportunities.
Yep, I mean, we've talked so highly about him, and you know, hopefully that will happen once the World Cup qualifiers come in for Argentina, definitely. I mean, and Juventus alone.
Moving to Germany, Bayern Munich, like clockwork, wearing the old uniforms, wins again. No Robert Lewandowski, didn't seem to be a problem. Mueller again having a big role. Serge Gnabry again being fantastic. Bayern is in a really good place right now, and if you were going to do a power rankings of right this moment, best team in Europe, maybe?
Yep, I think so. And, you know, taking in mind, you know, what we said about Hansi Flick, who had, you know, losing players like Lewandowski through injury, obviously is a big deal, but their team is so together. They understand each other's strengths and weaknesses so well, and they have so many weapons that at this point, they don't care who they face. It doesn't matter. Obviously, they are stronger with Lewandowski, but at this point, just because of the way they play and the depth in their squad and an understanding, there's no team in Europe, even Liverpool, just because of how they're struggling right now, not struggling, but you know, they're not living up to the ridiculous expectations that we've given them in this recent amount of time. Bayern Munich seems to be the leader in terms of the one in current form.
And I do wonder if we think they're the best form team in Europe right now, are they the favorite to win champions?
Well, I said that last week. Don't be surprised if they win it.
You know?
Don't be surprised. They I mean, you know, they made Chelsea look amateurish. And it's not that Chelsea's going to be the toughest challenger, but I can't see anybody else out there that than my rival, that at least the way that they're playing. At the very least, they'll give them a good game.
I'm not going to quite call this a two-team race yet in Germany, but it's starting to look like we're headed very much in that direction. Leipzig dropping points again. And I got to say, I was impressed with how Leipzig played against Tottenham in Champions League. I've been impressed for most of the season with how Nagelsmann's team has played. But lately, the last couple of weeks, they just keep dropping points, and you can't do that if you want to win the league.
Yeah, this is the last stretch of any season where you just know consistency is your ultimate weapon, and there's just little glimpses that fatigue's coming in a little bit, maybe the overwhelming notion of a tight race, I don't know, but yeah, you're beginning to see it. And again, another big date, April 4th. Bayern Munich visits Borussia Dortmund, so that should be a big one to decide. But you would think that it's, like you said, Leipzig is like dropping a little bit now. So really it's that two-horse race between Dortmund and Bayern.
And give Dortmund credit. They won a game at Gladbach, a very good team in its own right, which has sort of fallen off. But like, I mean, Dortmund really needs 3 points every game. And they got them on the road in a tough environment. They get the 2-1 win against Gladbach. And you've got now Bayern at 55 points, Dortmund at 51, 4 points behind. So really, Dortmund can't afford to fall behind here. But they do know that they host Bayern Munich. They're very much in this race.
Absolutely. The one thing that the other last thing I'll say about Leipzig is like this is what happens. Like the advantages of having a generally young team can only push you so much. And I think that, you know, especially towards the end of the stretch, especially with injuries, that can affect you a little bit. But like you said, Dortmund very much in this, and that game April 4th is going to be huge, obviously.
Really quickly, just wanted to take a look ahead to Champions League back this week. PSG is hosting Dortmund in an empty Parc des Princes. 2-1 lead for Dortmund going into this should be just a fantastic second leg. Really excited for it. Liverpool-Atletico. Liverpool's down a goal to Atleti and not playing great lately, Liverpool. I think they're going to come from behind and get what they need here, but I don't think that's inevitable.
I really don't know in this one. I mean, I watched that Bournemouth game this past weekend, and even though there were improvements, it really mainly took big mistakes from Bournemouth's side for them to capitalize. Definitely the opening goal. Granted, it was a win. And granted, to this point, they're only down by a goal and they're at Anfield. So you would think that they will definitely at least get a goal. I just don't, like, because of the cracks that we're seeing, you know, how is it going to work? And listen, they've missed Jordan Henderson a lot. So
more than I would have expected.
Yeah. You know, just it just says so much about the architect role and what he does, just the simple things, right? In an almost Xavi way, how he helps. So we'll see, but it's only 1-0 and all to play for at Anfield.
We've also got Leipzig hosting Spurs. Leipzig ahead 1-0 after the victory in London in the first leg. It feels like 3 or 4-0. Right?
I mean, definitely.
Especially the way Spurs is just not just playing, but approaching everything. It's like there's this dark cloud over Spurs right now, and maybe it's a Jose Mourinho shaped dark cloud, but it's just so depressing, everything around that team right now.
Listen, I got a few things to say about Tottenham.
Go for it.
I can't remember what game it was. I think it was the Chelsea game when they beat Tottenham 2-1, maybe. I can't remember. But there was a player that said, this is the worst Tottenham I've played. When we played at Mauricio Pochettino Tottenham, we were almost scared. There was an almost overwhelming sense because you knew that two things were coming. Really fast possession-based stuff and high physical press. Right. Sorry, three things. And very organized.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas now, what's happening is Tottenham is falling under the old Jose Mourinho, which is just wait, and it's not even a fast counter. It's just like hope to get it back and then be as direct as possible. So that's the first thing that's very worrying about Tottenham that's been going for a while. So to your point about 4-0, why not, right? The second thing is the way that Jose Mourinho just completely threw Tongo and Dembele under the bus this weekend. For those of you who don't know, they tied Burnley 1-1 and he had to make a replacement, you know, during the game, you know, taking off their you know, highest purchase in Tongo and Ndombele, but basically just going to town on criticizing him. So I just, what is your aim there to do it publicly? We know that Jose Mourinho antics, and I'm a big fan of him when he is charismatic in the sense of just saying things about his team as a whole or the opposition. But this was a direct attack on an individual player, one of his players, a young player. What are you doing? If it's to try and like build him up, I don't think that's going to work. And I just think that some things are better left said in the dressing room. And I think it's going to be a detrimental thing for him. And the squad is almost playing like how he's talking, which is kind of disrespectful.
Yeah, with the Ndombele thing, I think back to when Mourinho was the Inter manager and they won Champions League back in 2010 with a team that wasn't that good, to be honest. And that was Mourinho in his heyday. And his players loved him. And I remember doing a story on Mourinho for SI Magazine back in early 2011 and cited, was a video when Marco Materazzi learned that Mourinho was leaving Inter to go to Real Madrid after they had just won Champions League at Inter, and them seeing each other sort of unexpectedly. And Materazzi was like in tears, breaking down, hugging Mourinho. At that point in time, all of Mourinho's players and even his ex-players loved the guy. I don't think you can say that about him anymore. I don't think his players love him. I think he has changed. I think what he did back in those days, he's veered away from that. And this was a real example of it this weekend, because in the past, and even sometimes in the present, Mourinho has deflected negativity and criticism from his players and absorbed it himself. And it was kind of a strategy. Now it's like the opposite. He's actually calling out his own players.
I think he's relying too much on his reputation. Like nowadays, you know what I mean? He's hoping that his players, or at least the essence of the squad, is almost relying on the stories that you just talked about how back in the day he earned this respect just because of the person that he was. But now he's becoming somebody that's relying too much on the past, when a young player like Tongo Ndombele, what he needs is not criticism, or at least public, but rather help him understand what he can do in order to improve. I don't know. I'm not a professional Premier League manager, but I can tell you that, you know, that's just a black and white answer. You can't do that to any player, let alone a youth player or somebody in the Premier League. But, you know, Tottenham are falling to this. And now, like you said, they're playing away at Leipzig. Then they have to host Man United. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but it seems to me that Tottenham is just on a downfall right now.
The other midweek Champions League game is Valencia hosting Atalanta. Atalanta up 4-1 after the first leg here. And I'm hoping that we see some good Atalanta stories in the next few days here, or after, because I think they're going to advance, just about what's going on here. I think they're the best sort of story right now in Europe.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've talked about them already, about, you know, just the budget that they have. They have a championship team style budget. The manager is super offensive driven. Even their fullbacks love to score goals. And it's being proven right now in the way that they're scoring. Granted, Valencia is not the toughest opponent in the Champions League, but they really proved it in the first leg. Now, you know, I hate to say this, but an empty stadium is probably going to help them, you know, just in terms of what they can bring. But I don't think it matters, full or empty. They know exactly who they are as a squad. And they're going to, if you think they're going to park the bus, you're mistaken. They're going to try and keep scoring even more goals. So it should be a fun stuff to see. And to your point, I hope we see even more storylines, because they are a fun team to watch.
I might have to get me some Atalanta uniform shorts. You know, as I've probably mentioned here before, I collect soccer uniform shorts. I think they're great to exercise in at the gym. And I need a new pair, because my Orlando City the badge just fell off. I've worn them too much. I like the purple shorts, but I had an issue in the laundry last week. And so I'm thinking Atalanta.
Make it happen, man.
They have a cool badge, you know, like the hair and stuff.
No, they're fun. You collect shorts, I collect jerseys. So, like, I won their shirt. So, you know, we'll see. But no, they're a fun team, and they're great to watch. And I hope they continue to give us more storylines.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Let's move to the Americas because there's a lot to talk about at home here in this part of the world. MLS week two, there are four teams that are perfect after 2 weeks. And let me say first off here, I'm just glad we have an even number of teams in the league this year because every team has played twice. And it's actually kind of nice to have like every team playing every week and not have some lopsided nonsense.
I know, right? For the OCD in us, we like it. It's nice to see nice even. Yeah, it's good.
Four perfect teams so far on 6 points. Atlanta, Kansas City, Minnesota, and Colorado. And the team for me, all four playing good soccer right now, but the two teams that are probably the most surprising here, Minnesota and Colorado. And Minnesota in particular has done this on the road, just destroying San Jose 5-2 over the weekend after they had won at Portland 3-1 the week before. I did not have Minnesota in my preseason picks to make the playoffs, to even finish in the top seven in the West. Where did I go wrong?
I don't know, but I had them, but I didn't have them like high up. I just thought that they've been, listen, since their introduction, I felt that they've been learning, right? But I did not expect this. And to Adrian Heath's point, nobody should be shocked by this because you have been able to see an elevated style and philosophy. They've been very smart in the market as well, just the way that they've been building, because what they have is a team that understands each other very well. I mean, I thought that losing Darwin Quintero was probably not going to be a good thing, but they have just been able to really just build a squad that just completely, I mean, listen, the fact that Opara, like defender of the year last year, is now going for Golden Boot at this point anyway.
He's the best acquisition they made.
It's absolutely amazing. And then what they do is they play this really cool sort of, it's like a 4-2-3-1, right? So they have like Amaria like up top. But then they just completely support it with this really strong midfield. But they can score from anywhere. They're really good on set pieces. I don't know. They're just super fun to watch. And the last point which you made was they're not doing this at home.
Right.
They're killing people away from home. They don't care where they are. And it's great. Good for them.
I mean, obviously, it's two games in, so everyone keep that in mind.
Right.
But, like, if they can play this well at home, and there's no reason they shouldn't be able to play better at home, then they could really make something out of this. Colorado getting another win at home. Robin Fraser, the coach who came in last season, forget for a second that there have been basically zero minority coaches in MLS over the years. Robin Fraser is one of the few, the very few.
Yeah.
And he's a good coach. He's been in Toronto for a long time. He's been with Greg Vanney in various places. Great to see him get an opportunity. And he is making the most of it with this team.
Yeah, listen, I didn't see the full game this weekend, but I saw the full game when they played DC United. Yeah. And they were great. They were really good, and it's never easy to open the weekend of MLS away from home, especially perhaps in a colder climate to what you're used to at that time. I mean, I can't remember how cold it was that day, but Colorado looked great, and they play some really nice stuff. Once again, the acquisitions were smart here, and still early, but two wins, both being 2-1, it speaks, you know, really well. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few games. They have Vancouver Whitecaps, and then they have Houston Dynamo, I think. So, but
I think that could be two more wins. And you're talking about a team that's very good on set pieces, very well organized, and very impressed that against DC on the road, they went for the win in the last 10 minutes of that game instead of just accepting a point.
Yep, good stuff.
Not so surprising maybe that Atlanta and Kansas City are perfect so far, but for Kansas City, after a really down season last year, I think impressive to get 3 points on the road at Vancouver in week one and then to just obliterate Houston 4-0.
Yeah, I mean, Sporting Kansas City, listen, the storyline here, aside from the fact that they're doing well, is Alan Pulido, right? I mean, listen, as soon as he came into this league, we discussed this. Obviously, we're going to talk about it in a second, but he was always going to deliver. He's just a goal scorer. He may not be somebody that's as flashy as a news story as Chicharito or Carlos Vela, but this guy can play, and he's delivered day in and day out in one of the toughest leagues, if not the toughest league in the Americas, which is Liga MX. And him coming here, the only question was just going to be like, how was his support going to be? But the thing about Alan Pulido is if we talk about Chicharito being a poacher, Alan Pulido lives to score. He loves and he finds spaces so well. And this goal this past weekend was another good example. So, you know, it's a really, really good smart buy and the team's looking good.
Here's what I would say about Kansas City is Pulido is the biggest transfer in the history of their team by far in terms of cost. And even when they haven't been great like last year in the league, I have always thought that Kansas City and the way Peter Vermes runs that organization, the administration is so good. They're so just smart about how they do everything that you weren't going to have a situation here where they spent this money on Pulido and they and Kansas City as an organization was going to like be lax in getting him adjusted to the team. They were going to do everything it took to get him acclimatized and in a position where he could get off to a really good start like this.
I mean, you know Peter Vermes very well. I've talked to him a lot of times. This guy is one of the smartest brains in soccer in the country. And, you know, the squad is just showing it. And it was a very smart play and a very smart sell to Pulido, by the way, because I'm sure he had many options. So, you know, well played. The test now is going to be fun, Atlanta United. So that should be a good one.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. There are four teams that are pointless so far in MLS after 2 weeks. Cincinnati, which is not unexpected. Inter Miami, also not totally unexpected. I feel like they didn't totally deserve to be pointless.
They were so unlucky this weekend because I did see that game and they were playing well. And that red card on Roman Torres, which is like still to me a little what, completely flipped the script.
Yeah.
Completely. So I'm putting my money on that they'll win, you know, on their home opener. But they were very unlucky this weekend.
I do like their shorts. It's between Atalanta and Inter Miami, I think.
Their shorts are good, but make this shirt pink,
I know,
man. Like, what is this?
But the shorts are kind of pink.
The shorts are cool.
Yeah.
Leave the shorts where they are and then just have a really nice, shiny pink. Because right now it looks like this tinted 80s old man white that like after 30 minutes of running, it gets all like weird.
Yeah.
And your mom's like, what are you doing? Throw that away. That's what that Inter Miami shirt looks like.
True. I did go on the MLS site though to try and buy the shorts and they weren't there this weekend.
Because everybody's going for the shorts, but not the shirt.
Disappointing. Disappointing. Other pointless teams, Nashville, also not particularly surprising, even though I don't think they've played terribly. It's just they've taken a couple of L's in the first couple of games here. And then somewhat surprisingly, NYCFC. Now, it's only two games. The first game got an early red card.
That was tough for them.
Against Columbus. And then in this game against Toronto, they were looking like they were going to get a point. And then Toronto finally breaks through.
NYCFC is going to get its act together. I'm not too worried about them. I think that the first opening game was really hard on them. And early, I mean, the red card to Chanel was, in the third minute? And they had to play with 10 men for the entire game away from home. And crew were pushing, but NYCFC had its chances too. And as you mentioned, this past weekend at Toronto, another late, they conceded late. I think they'll get their act together. I'm not too worried about them. It's more about them staying healthy. And I think a good way for them to wake themselves up is in the CONCACAF Champions League.
Where things are going okay. They got a tough, they got Tigres, don't
against
they?
Against Tigres and André Pierre Gignac, who is just amazing. I've been trying to get a chat with him forever for us. And Tigres PR, listen, like, come on now, get it together, because he's just such a force.
Wasn't Gignac in New York last week?
Yeah, I know, but like, do you know how hard it is to talk to this guy? It's so annoying.
Really? Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah. Anyway, but no, I think NYCFC will get its act together. And then after they play Tigres, which would be a good, obviously a great game, they're hosting Dallas, so we'll see what happens, but I'm not too worried about them.
Want to move in MLS to what I call the epicenter of MLS the last couple of years, which is Los Angeles, where a couple of interesting situations. First off, you got LA Galaxy, which loses at home 1-0 to a Vancouver team that I don't think is that good. Nice win here for Vancouver. Chicharito, LA seems to not be playing in a way that is conducive to Chicharito being productive for them. They're just dumping crosses into the box. That's not his game. Galaxy doesn't seem to have really changed their approach much from last season. And after this game, Chicharito, who's been doing all sorts of shows in LA
the week leading up to this,
doesn't talk to the media.
I mean, we're both quiet for a second there because we know what the answer is. I mean, that's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, you go on James Corden, you go on, you know, you do a skit with Jimmy Kimmel, Ahora o Nunca with ESPN. I mean, all great things to live up and, you know, enlighten and enliven and sort of energize the LA Galaxy fan base. But the moment where you really, truly need it to talk about the good and the bad, you're not there. I mean, you know, I just think that that's really not a good message. And I don't want to point all the fingers on Chicharito.
Right.
Because this is not about him. It's about the club.
I'll put a giant finger at Scalotto right now for not seeming to have his team playing in a way that is smart.
Grant, Chicharito has 2 shots. Neither are on target. And the fewest touches out of any LA Galaxy player. So the answer is, and we all knew this, we talked about it, we wrote about it, right? We said, don't expect Zlatan Ibrahimovic style Chicharito. This is a person that needs to touch the ball and needs to have, you know, opportunities to score from very simple areas, and that's just not happening. So Scalotto has to fix this fast, because it's becoming kind of, I know that it's just week 2, but I don't think that you've given any kind of evidence that LA Galaxy is going to improve in any way.
It's a really fascinating story to keep following here, because there was so much attention. Obviously, there is so much attention on Chicharito out in LA. I do want to talk briefly about media and what players are obligated to do and what they're not, what we think at least. And I can also talk about how I not intentionally got into a Twitter situation this weekend with a tweet of mine about media access. And I guess, you know, not everyone who watches the games, who listens to this podcast, knows like the inside baseball of how media works, how media access works, when we talk to players, what is appropriate and what's not. And so the other day I end up tweeting, after the NHL announced that they were going to close locker rooms because of coronavirus. Over the years, and I've done this for a long time, I've done post-game locker rooms in different sports, mainly basketball and soccer, but I've also covered baseball and NFL and other stuff. I also cover women's sports, including the U.S. women's national team. And in my experience, the U.S. women's national team has never opened their locker room before or after a game. And we do interviews post-game in a place called the Mixed Zone, which is this area outside.
Ooh, the mix zone. It sounds great, but it's terrible.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it is what it is. It's an area outside the locker room where the players come through, and there's like a kind of a little barrier, and the media are on one side, players are on the other.
It's the poor man's red carpet.
Basically. And you can do interviews in that area. Now, are they going to be one-on-one interviews? Probably not, because you've got media there, and it's, you know, and the players can also just walk by. They don't necessarily have to talk. And like I said, it's not perfect, but in my experience, I have never felt like I needed to be in the U.S. women's national team's locker room after a game. I don't feel like that's, I feel like I get what I need and I don't need to be in there. Now, there's a lot of context to this, right? Because different sports are different, you know, and also there's before games. Like I think the U.S. women's national team gives pretty decent access on off days if they're in a camp or in a tournament, and you can get them, you know, and even get one-on-one interviews sometimes. Other sports like baseball are different. There's 162 games in a year. There's no real practices where you can get media access. And so you have locker rooms open, clubhouse, before games and after games. And that's sort of the tradition. So when I tweeted the other day that I don't think, based on my experience covering women's sports, and I've kind of changed over the years, that really any of us should be in locker rooms, I got a lot of negative reaction from other journalists. I expected that, maybe not to the extent I did, but also from baseball, especially.
Here comes the ratio.
Yeah, and I got, it was a, as somebody put it, the rare blue verified checkmark ratio, where like almost all of the negative responses were from verified media people, which teaches me once again, if you're ever going to start a tweet with, this may be unpopular with the vast majority of my colleagues, that. If you're going to start with that, maybe... Yeah. Hold your fire.
Is the Twitter equivalent of no offense. No offense, but you're about to offend them.
Or Jermaine Jones, with all due respect.
Listen, like, I don't want to get too much into this, but first of all, everybody calm down, okay? Everybody calm down. Somebody has an opinion. They're entitled to that opinion. And if you want to give your thoughts, go ahead. I just believe that at the bottom of the rabbit hole, sometimes, and most often than not, especially on Twitter, it becomes this like... just opportunity to just attack and offend. Calm down. The second thing that I'll say, which is something my friend Felipe Cardenas said, which is brought to you point as well, is like, by the way, you go to Europe or South America, this is like, what are you talking about? Like, can you imagine going into the locker room of the Premier League and just like going right in the face of, you know,
right.
Tanguy and Ndombele, right? And just like, you know, so... sometimes I think American-based media just needs to calm. Like the access that certain reporters have is amazing. My other point is this. Many people make a living out of this, and they really depend on those inside the locker room conversations.
Right.
So I want to acknowledge that because I, you know, it's not as, you know, black and white as to say, you know, without this, you could fix this. My answer is that as a whole, the relationship between media and clubs needs to completely evolve. It needs to change because the mix zone for the majority of the time is kind of a joke because a player can just literally freely just walk by.
But I don't think a player's obligated to do interviews.
And it's not even an attack on a player because they're not being told you have to stop. And to your point as well, it doesn't become as valuable as a one-on-one because, you know, you can just have a little tiny quote. So there are many angles and perspectives to this. Just my thing is that I think that what you may think you may be gaining from a locker room conversation may not be the same thing that you may be gaining from another club or another athlete or another perspective to your point about
what
the
what I really regret is if my tweet caused in any way my colleagues to suffer or eventually might, who knows? Obviously, I don't think my single tweet's going to do anything
they're
like that.
They're not offended, man.
But
they're
no,
not
but
offended.
Like,
they want to tell you they're offended, but
you
got to
understand, like, I don't want to do something that will hurt the group of people
I work with. Of course, because
it's
a family. Right. We're a team.
You know, so I want to be supportive.
Which you did. You apologized.
So what I ended up saying was that I think I would love to find ways to not have to do these things in the locker room. But if we did that, I don't want there to be less overall access than there is now.
Of course, that was never your point. And I go back to my point. The only way to do that is to have an evolution of what that culture is after the game. How can we improve this? And I think that for a long time, it hasn't really been thought about, which brings me back to Chicharito not
right.
talking. Right? So...
if you look at what, like, especially in MLS, which part of what these guys are getting paid for, especially the biggest stars, is to not just play, but to promote the league and his team and himself in a country where soccer is not the top sport. And this is a growing sport. And it is, I know it's communicated to these guys, look, this is part of what we're paying you for.
Yeah.
Is to do media. And you may not always want to do it after a tough loss at home to Vancouver, but you need to do it. It's also, if you look over in LA, LeBron James is doing a ton of locker room media access before and after every game.
Every game.
And you're telling me that LeBron James can do that, and he doesn't win every game, but you don't do that?
And it adds a little bit more controversy because this was the home opener and his home opener and his debut at home. That to me is just like, and again, I am not pointing fingers just at Chicharito. I think this was a club mistake. I think that, to your point, win or lose in the home opener, your debut at home, it doesn't matter whether you lost 5-0 or 1-5-0, you owed the media, reporters, and fans the right to just sit there and just talk for 15 minutes and then go.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Carlos Vela didn't talk after LAFC 3, Philadelphia 3.
What a game.
Which was a great game. With a great goal by Carlos Vela on the free kick.
I mean, it had a lot of great goals, but yeah, that Carlos Vela free kick was incredible.
Yeah. But it happened so late at night. I was asleep on the East Coast, so I had to catch up on the highlights. But I do think if LA is the epicenter of soccer in MLS, which it is, I get frustrated that so many games are kickoff at 10:50 p.m. Eastern on a Sunday night. And I get it. People are going to say East Coast bias and all that stuff.
And that's the voice they're going to use, by the way.
But you can still play these games earlier on a weekend day.
Especially on a Sunday night.
You know?
Like, I'm with you. Listen, I lived on the West Coast. Like, I don't think there's no pro. Like, obviously, you're thinking that it's a 7 p.m. game in L.A. Why can't you make it a 5 p.m. game? I don't know. It's just it's very late. And if you're trying to sell the market, especially on a Sunday night, it's kind of difficult. I understand the time difference. I don't need angry emails. I just think that especially because there were only two games that day, they could have probably been better thinking when it comes to that. And one of the teams, by the way, is an East Coast team, so you can't tell me anything about that. I just think, I completely agree. I think 10 is a little late.
But great game. LAFC is the Dortmund of MLS, where they're going to be box office. They're going to have an entertaining game with a lot of goals, typically, anytime you watch them. I think defensively, there's some real concerns on that team without Walker Zimmerman. You know?
Yeah, we said that. Zimmerman's loss is a big deal. And that's always going to be LAFC's problem. It wasn't the playoffs last season. It's going to be this season. I still think they're going to win the whole thing, but they need to figure it out defensively. Because to concede three, you know, in a game, you know, all credit to the Union. But, you know, I just think that they need to just strengthen their core at the back a little bit more if they really want to make a run. But it's week two, so hopefully that will change a little bit.
I want to mention Boca Juniors winning in Argentina.
Amazing
the league
stuff.
On the last day of the league season, beating out River Plate, which had control of its own destiny heading into this, and got a tie instead, allowing Boca to have the opportunity with a win in La Bombonera, where Carlos Tevez scores, I think, 72nd minute.
Yeah, it's around that, yeah.
The winner against the team coached by Diego Maradona, former Boca legend.
Just, I mean, the storyline, you can't even make this up, right? River Plate was leading before the kickoff by 1 point. All they needed to do was replicate the same result as Boca Juniors, and Marcelo Gallardo, believe it or not, would have won his first ever league title. But what happens? Atletico Tucumán tied River Plate in that game. And on the other side, to your point, Carlos Tevez scored, playing against a Boca Juniors legend. And and Diego Maradona. Even though he didn't spend that much time with them, he won them a title. And so, you know, he was welcomed with open arms. His grandson was there, Benjamin, who's Sergio Agüero's son. You know, just the atmosphere was amazing. And it was looking nil-nil for a very long time. And then Tevez scores. And at the end, he runs to Maradona. He kisses him on the lips. It was just unbelievable, just unbelievable stuff. And Boca Juniors wins the league. And Gallardo's still waiting for his first league title, which actually brings me to the other point. Like, what is of his future? Because he is a very wanted man. And, well, does he want to stick around and try and win it once again? Or is he satisfied with everything else that he's won, including Copa Libertadores?
A lot of talk that Inter Miami wanted Gallardo.
I mean, he is a manager. And I think he's good enough for Europe at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's more about where he wants to go. But, you know, time will tell. But, yeah, to your point, great stuff. Congrats to Boca Juniors, who has Carlos Zambrano, by the way, Peruvian center back. That was fun.
A couple things I would mention here. Just one, because you mentioned Gallardo, is Gabriel Heinze, the Vélez Sarsfield coach, former national team player for Argentina, leaving his position. And another guy who I think could be a real nice addition to MLS.
Yep.
If somebody gets fired soon. But Carlos Tevez, I thought was washed. I thought he was done. And he went to China, became the highest paid player in the world, and basically ballooned, didn't care, just cashed his checks over in China, comes back to Boca, and even for a while there, even when Scalotto was still there, wasn't really a starter.
Nope.
Seemed like he was sort of out of it. And this is a guy who's like in his mid-30s now.
He's 36.
36. And for this moment, he's so beloved by the Boca fans and by the same types of fans that love Maradona.
Yep.
For his personal story, what he represents, the part of Buenos Aires from the shanty towns that he comes from. And so to have a moment like this and to see the video of all of it, of scoring this title-winning goal, and then go to a game in La Bombonera if you can, everyone.
I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Because it's just the atmosphere is off the charts, and they've got these fences that fans will climb up on top of and sort of, I don't know how they do it. It looks like dangerous.
They care.
Right. But, and then Tevez, after he scores the goal, climbs up on the fence and starts shaking it. And
great photo.
It's so cool.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, I reviewed Netflix's Boca Juniors Confidential for us last year, you know, documentary, their version of, you know, All or Nothing. And Carlos Tevez, it begins with Carlos Tevez and his story and his friends talking about him and stuff. So season two, I think, is coming and that should be really interesting. But yeah, congrats to Nico Cantor, Andres Cantor, Grant Wall, all you Boca Juniors fans.
Vamos!
That was fun.
Vamos, Posteros!
Yeah. Sorry, Fernando Fiore, because he's a River Plate fan. But anyway, that was good. Good stuff.
Lastly, I want to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team. Beating Spain 1-0 after beating England earlier in the week. Kristen Press with a ridiculous goal against England.
That's just an evergreen tweet now.
She's amazing, man.
I love her so much.
And she ends up coming on in this game and providing a great ball to Julie Ertz for the 86th minute goal that finally allows the U.S. to break through for a win against a very tough Spain team.
Spain was good.
It just seems to get better and better.
Spain was good. More possession, even shots with the U.S. They gave the U.S. a really good fight.
Yeah, and obviously these two teams played a tough game at the World Cup. I think the hardest game in the elimination rounds for the U.S. In the World Cup. The one thing Spain's lacking is just a ruthless finisher.
Yeah.
In the really hard games. If they ever get one, that's going to be scary for the rest of the world. But in this game, Spain showed they can possess really well, even against the U.S., which, you know, the U.S.'s pressure is usually really tough, and Lynn Williams is right at the top of that, and she didn't really have a huge impact pressing in this game. Just because technically the Spanish players are so good on the ball.
So good.
Not only could Spain possess, but their counters were very good too.
Yep. Well, they play very wide, right?
Yeah.
They have, you know, two really good fullbacks, but at the same time, Jenny Hermoso leads that point. But their wingers, or at least their attacking midfielders that go wide, they love to open that game and just create shape everywhere. They're a great team, and, you know, that's why it was very difficult for the world champion.
So a couple of points I would say here. Kristen Pratt has earned a starting spot. She yep. has had an amazing 2020. And it was interesting after the game, I'm going to write about this, she was talking about how much more freedom she feels now under the new regime than from the previous regime under Jill Ellis, where she wasn't necessarily ripping them, but she said that she often felt like she was having to overthink what she was doing, and they were sort of more programmed than they are under Vladko Andonovsky.
You can totally see that. I 100% agree with that. I remember under Ellis, Kristen Press had very specific roles. And not just the Spain game, but the one before her goal, I don't think, you know, she went more central and, you know, she had more of a freedom to do. That quote, what she said, I totally agree with that. She's playing like she feels she can have more of a free role, or at least the freedom to express herself more, which is great.
And I think right now, this is going to make for an interesting call. The question is, if you start Kristen Press, who do you not start? And right now, it seems to be Megan Rapinoe.
Well, the other thing, by the way, Grant, too, is there's a point to be said about the super sub, right? Does Kristen Press fall under that thing where that may be one of the reasons why she's so electric is because she's coming in at a time, for the majority of games, right? Coming in at a time, does Vladko think, you know, let's tire the opponent a little bit, and then just before you know it, we're going to hit you with Kristen Press? I don't know. But again, yes, you have to fight that post if you want to start off Megan Rapinoe. So,
also, interesting timing, and the players talked about this afterward, of Carlos Cordero, the U.S. soccer president, sending out this letter the night before a tournament game against Spain, in which he says that, we U.S. soccer have offered the women's team exactly equal compensation to the men for all friendlies and games, and they don't want it. They're still demanding that that we U.S. soccer cover their the prize money deficit that FIFA has because of its decisions with its prize money. And the U.S. players and their representation firing back very strongly was saying, like, look, this isn't true. So I don't know what's true and what's not right now, okay? So
the timing's weird.
But the timing stinks.
Yeah.
And that's what the players were upset about, like, I think, mainly.
Doing?
Of like, you're putting this out the night before a pretty big game, and why would you do that?
It's just very strange. It's really disrespectful, to be honest. I mean, you know, that's just crazy.
So the big takeaway for me...
It's the World Cup champions. What are you doing?
Yeah, the big takeaway for me is, like, I all along have thought that this case, this gender discrimination lawsuit from the U.S. women's players against U.S. soccer would be settled. That it would end with U.S. soccer writing a big check.
Doesn't look like that right now.
And more than ever right now, it to me looks like we may actually get a court case out of
this.
Yeah,
that's what it seems
like. They've gone through discovery. I thought we wouldn't even get to that point. And so that's what's fascinating to me is that, like, that starts in early May, that trial, and we may actually get to a trial.
And that letter really seems indicative of that. The fact that no way, no how.
They're not close.
No, not even close.
On that note,
we're close.
We are close to ending this. Thanks for sticking with us on what ended up being a very long podcast, but there's a lot to talk about in the soccer world these days. And I always enjoy doing it with you, my friend. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great week, Luis Miguel.
Have a good one, my man. Have a good one, everybody.